Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. Joining me in the studio is my wife, Jan. Jan, how does it feel to be back on the radio?
I don't know yet. I haven't been on but 2 seconds.
Ah, she has no sense of adventure. Jan and I have been discussing bringing back our Sunday afternoon program for quite some time. And actually, my plan was to start it back up with the onset of the Casey Anthony trial. Late yesterday afternoon, I decided that there was just so much happening that it was time to move that date forward. So here we are. With such short notice, a couple of panelists can't join us today because of previous commitments, but we still have a formidable group from the state of Maine. Hopefully we have Peter Hyatt. Peter, are you with us yet? No, I know that Peter is having some problems connecting, but I'm sure that he will be with us very shortly. From Fort Lauderdale, Florida, we have my good friend, investigator, and I believe the politically correct term is recovery agent, William Cobra Storbs. Cobra, it is always good to talk to you.
And likewise to you, Simon. And Jan, how are you?
I'm fine, Cobra. Good to have you with us.
I was talking to Cobra earlier this morning, and he told me he was in the midst of remodeling his kitchen, and he actually sent a picture. And I have to admit, Cobra, that I would not use the word remodeling. It looked more like the aftermath of a hurricane.
That's what it looks like. I was experimenting with some toxic materials, and it appeared to have taken explosive effect.
And I don't know quite why it is, but you're sounding quiet and distant. So maybe you want to sling that phone closer to your ear.
Because I've got a phone situation here I've been working with for days, but I'll try to work it out.
All righty. We're also joined this week by Dave Neckel, otherwise known as Marinade Dave. Dave is the go-to guy for watching the legal wrangling and what is happening in the Casey Anthony case. Dave, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Hello, Simon. Hello, Jan. And hello, Cobra.
Hello, Dave.
All right. I'm going to try an experiment and see if we now have Peter Hyatt on the line. Peter, do we have you now?
I'm here.
All right. For anyone that's not familiar with the name Peter Hyatt, he lives in the great state of Maine, and his speciality is the wizardry of statement analysis. Peter, it is great to talk to you again.
Simon, I'm so glad your program's back on. I've missed it.
And as always, our chat room is open, and if you have questions for us, please feel free to ask them in there, and we will try to get to as many as we possibly can. The primary reason that I wanted to, or I decided to resurrect the program today, is the upcoming Casey Anthony trial. We just went through 3.5 days of legal wrangling. Jen, you watched more of it than I did, and trust me, I'm not looking for any legal analysis here, but what were your overall impressions?
Okay, you really want me to tell you what I think, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I personally think that the defense team in this case has just made the case into nothing but a circus, and it's got Baez and Cheney as their main attraction clowns. I mean, that's just my opinion of it. They have done nothing but made a big joke out of this. And I know they're not claiming that is what they're doing, but, I mean, come on, let's face it. Some of the things that they're doing are just hilarious. I mean, you can't help but laugh.
Well, the thing that caught my attention was just how bloody rude Cheney Mason is.
He's very rude.
He's a guy I would not invite over for dinner. Enough of the emotional side of things. Dave, I believe you were in court for some of the haggling. What was the defense trying to achieve?
Well, I was there Wednesday and Thursday. I didn't make it Friday because I had other obligations, but I did go the following Monday when they had their final arguments. I think it comes down to this, whether she was Mirandized or not. And I've got a sneaking suspicion that she wasn't. But how the judge looks at it is... it's anybody's guess, because there are different interpretations. I've read I don't know how many different case law arguments for and against. So I don't know how the judge is going to rule. There was a
call.
I'm sorry?
Yes, it's his call now.
Yes, it is. And I think that one of the most important things to remember is that if it was so simple, he would have decided by now. He
right.
clearly said, after the arguments on Monday, that he'll have a ruling, by the end of next week, which is now the start of this week. So from Friday, I would think somewhere before then or on that day, he's going to come down with his rendering.
You're breaking up.
I am?
Yeah.
Peter, I'd like to get your thoughts. I'm sure that you had much better things to do than, spend 3.5 days watching Cheney Mason be rude to everyone in court, but what do you think about last week's debacle?
Well, I'd have to confess to the guilty pleasure of DVRing it or taping it, however that phrase is, when it was on Court TV or whatever that channel is now called. And I think I'd rather talk about Jan's impressions, because it was amusing. And it's really riveting, and it hasn't begun yet. So for those who said that this would be as big as the O.J. Simpson trial, and I thought it wasn't, I was wrong. They were right. I think it's going to be as big. And Cheney Mason's an interesting character, because it's almost as if he brought a reputation into this, and it wasn't accepted. And he's retreated to the language of a junior high insecure kid. It began with Kathy Belich, and it went on from there to Judge Strickland, where he wanted to be treated as two pals that wink, wink, know each other, and are pals and know each other well enough to just kind of accept what Cheney Mason's going to say, and Judge Strickland didn't buy that. But now Judge Perry also has put the kibosh on him. So what I think is that it wasn't ruled from the bench because some may be allowed, some may not be allowed, and I'm not a legal mind, so what I'm thinking is that this will continue. Judge Strickland and Judge Perry, I think, have both done a terrific job of not only reining in Jose Baez, but I think they've bent over backwards to be fair to the defense with one eye on the potential for an appeal. And I think there may be some things that may not be allowed. But right now it looks like Jose Baez is asking that all the evidence be disallowed and everything ever said be disallowed. And, of course, that's not going to go. But it shows the defense has a certain strategy they're going to follow. And it's not much of a strategy, but it is.
Dave, back to you for a second. If the defense is victorious in the Miranda battle and manages to get the early statements tossed, what is the effect on the overall prosecution case?
Well, you know, first of all, when Casey gave her four-page statement, which she wrote down, you know, her statement, that was prior to being a suspect of anything. So there was no need to be Mirandized at all. You know, it would be no different than somebody asking me a question about somebody else. So stay in there.
Dave,
yes.
Can you possibly call back in? You seem to be breaking up.
Yeah, let me try a different phone. Let me try that.
No problem. Cobra,
okay.
It seems to me that you likely have some thoughts on the recent court battle. What were your impressions? And I believe you watched at least part of the hearings.
I did, and I just wanted to tell you a tidbit of information first. The Grun family has been properly subpoenaed for the prosecution against Casey. That I spoke to Mr. Grun this afternoon, and that's all he wanted to release at this time, that he was served, and he will be going in for the prosecution of the girl. Now, as I watched this thing this week and saw it unfold, I thought, damn, if they would just left it alone, they probably had an out by failure to Mirandize her. But I kind of agree with Dave. Miranda is a tricky little thing as to what time do you actually Mirandize a person. And that's why the judge is taking time on this thing. He would, if it was slam dunk, he would have kicked it back already with an answer. But it's a little bit tricky as to they first were looking for a missing child and possibly a dead child, possibly this, possibly that. And as long as you're asking a defendant or a subject questions and you're not going to the route of, you know, trying to trap them, it goes to the entrapment side. That's why they Mirandize them, to let them know, hey, we're looking at you real hard right now, so anything you say can, will be used against you, and that's can and will be used against you in a court of law. And they didn't do that because at first it was just, you know, a friendly thing. But if you listen a little closer, after she was arrested and lawyered up and was no longer talking to any detectives, apparently and allegedly the detectives went back around and tried to get a second bite at the apple by telling the mother and the father, get her, you know, you ask her these questions and can report back to us in a kind of in a roundabout way. So that's why the judge has got some different areas that he's looking at, because it's not cut and dry as everyone would think. But I think it's hilarious that now all of a sudden they did have a very good possibility of getting all her old statements thrown out, the lies that she told about going to the school, working at the school, being over here, being over there, this, that, and the other. And when they did such a hell of a bang-up job trying to set up Jesse Grun for the fall, had they not tried to set up Jesse Grun, tried to capture his DNA on two different occasions that we both know well about, and it's also in the public record now that that actually occurred, I think she would have had a good escape route. But now, even if they throw all that stuff out, it still goes to show that Lee and her was both still conspiring to set someone up for this, meaning they had foreknowledge of it. So I think they overworked it. I think they went a little bit too far.
Peter, do you think that that there's going to be a big problem for the prosecution if the early statements get tossed?
I don't, and I think what Grover said really holds true, that in the beginning, this was an area of cooperation between them, and law enforcement had assumed that Cindy Anthony, for instance, was working to find Kaylee, and that would be a presumption they begin with. So we have the 911 call, and then we have the 911 call, which then says, you know, she now has been taken. So that theory is in motion. Interesting enough is that Cheney Mason, in his assertion that law enforcement was conspiring against Casey, said a lot of noise there.
Noise is just something we learn to live with.
Okay. So I think that when he said that they're conspiring against Casey from the very beginning, that rules out all the possibility of the cooperation that they're looking for a live child who's been reported kidnapped. So it's only a natural assumption that the family's going to want to get any information they can about a kidnapping. So I think, as Cobra pointed out, they can't have it both ways.
Right. And I believe we have Dave back with us. Dave, is that you?
Yeah, I'm here. Let's see if this is a little bit better. I plugged my other phone back in. I don't know.
Dave Neckel, the man of many phones.
Yes, that's me.
I was posing the question to Peter and Cobra about, you know, how large a block the early Casey Anthony statements might be if the Miranda if her Miranda rights were violated. I personally think that there's lots and lots of other evidence, so I don't see it as a huge roadblock. What's your view?
No, I don't either. As a matter of fact, I wrote on my blog that they're going to allow the statement that she wrote. That should remain. And up until she was considered a suspect, everything prior to that should be left alone. Now, where the judge draws the line in that gray area where she went from a witness to a suspect, that's going to be up to him to decide. He might end up saying, no, I'm going to let it all in, but he's certainly not going to let it all, you know, take it all out. But at the same time, the car was not Casey's, and her parents gave permission for the police to take it. And so anything that came in like that, like when they found the body, there's so much evidence there that, by the way, one of the most important things to remember is that when Casey lawyered up on the 17th, she shut her mouth, except for when she had those phone calls, you know, from her parents in jail, visitation stuff. But most of that stuff is really going to be just to show her demeanor, how she didn't care about her missing child. All she cared about was her. So that's going to play against her, you know, if the judge allows it. And that's one of the reasons why the defense wants it out of there.
All right. Cobra, I'm going to bounce one off you. It seems to me that the bias strategy has been to throw stuff at the wall and just see if any of it sticks. Zanny the Nanny didn't appear to gain any traction, and it seems somewhat unlikely that Dial M for meter reader Roy Kronk is going anywhere. I know that you talked about the Grunns very briefly earlier in the program. Do you think that's where they're pinning their hopes? They're still going to try and stick Jesse with the problem?
I'll tell you what, if you watch all the blogospheres out there and everything that's going on from the hate group that's targeted Mr. Grunn and his family, and you see the demeanor that the investigators had going after it. You see the involvement that Lee had, and we still haven't unscrambled exactly what that hidden message was that he was sending her in jail when he was giving his condolence speech or whatever the crap that was that day. We're still trying to unravel that. We're almost there. But to me, it's about the only thing they got left is she didn't do it, someone else did, but they failed in their attempt, thank God, to get the DNA, which would have made a scientific fact that, you know, scientific fact only, that Jesse Grund's DNA was on that body. And what leads me to believe, one, they knew where the body was. Two, I don't think Crump the meter reader is totally clean hands with this, or maybe he was led down a primrose path. But when I spoke to Hoover, he was the investigator that was married to Dominic Casey. Those two were partnered in the thing. And Grund and I met with him and interviewed him for several hours when all this took effect. And everybody knew when Jesse gave his statement that she had came over to the house to take a shower. Didn't look like she needed a shower, but she hung out around there and he stayed on the computer. He never messed with her. We believe through our investigation that she got cold feet and she really didn't know what type of DNA evidence that she was having to obtain. So therefore, when Hoover told us that Lee went to Atlanta, Georgia, to locate Jesse, and his sole intention was to collect his DNA. Now, how he expected to do that, I don't know, but he came back empty as well. So, to me, there's always been someone looking for a fall guy, and this is Zanny the Nanny business. I think Padilla is the one that found that Zanny the Nanny girl, but Zanny was always Xanax. That was the right theme behind it. It was the drugs. It wasn't a person. It wasn't until Padilla started looking for Zanny, and then all of a sudden, somehow his team stumbled across the Zanny and Zanny Gonzalez, and then all of a sudden, yeah, that's her. And so they've been looking for an scapegoat all the while. And her actions leading up to the whole thing really show, you know, the truth of it. And that's where everything hangs is, you know, child's missing for a month. So that's where everything really goes to. Forget all the lies and all the excuses and all the crap going in there. Now mommy and daddy are both trying to have their stories recanted. Daddy said it sounded like a dead, smelled like a dead body. Mama said it smelled like a dead body. Those interrogations that George gave freely at the sheriff's office, you know, kind of bragging, if you will, that he was a cop for years, and once you smell that smell, you never forget. And all those statements that they made early on, now they want those all recanted because none of them were Mirandized, but those were free given statements. And that hung that little girl, regardless of what they think now. They were pissed at her, and that's what happens a lot of times in domestic squabbles. Two people get into it, and one of them gets arrested, and by the time trial comes around, the other party, typically the female, is wanting to dismiss the case. That's why the states have picked up those charges now and carried them on, because the person who was actually angry at the time has now cooled down and rethought it and don't want their loved one or their significant other to suffer any further demise over this situation. And that's kind of what you have in this case here. They're all feeling kind of remorse that at first they were really pissed, and now that they're fighting to save her life or to save her from, you know, an extended period of time at the taxpayer's expense.
Peter, I know that you're not, you know, a professional attorney, but I'm just looking for your thoughts. Let's assume that the judge rules that the free testimony that Casey gave before the Miranda rights were read gets tossed. Do you think that would include the testimony by other people? You know, and the reason I'm asking this is, of course, that infamous 911 call. It wasn't made by Casey. It was made by Cindy Anthony.
Well, let's remember that the this is the same guy you're talking to who a year ago predicted that they would cut a deal and plea out of this thing. So I've been wrong a couple times in this case. And that plea is one of them. I think that anything that gets tossed out, will, if there's anything tossed out, it will be minor and it will be exclusive to Casey Anthony, not to the rest of the family.
Right. Dave, do you concur on that?
Well, ask me that question again. I was listening, but I got a couple of things that are going around in my head at the same time. So,
okay. Let's assume that Judge Perry rules that the evidence that was, quote, freely given before she was offered Miranda is tossed. Would that also toss other evidence from family members?
No.
And I'm thinking about the 911 call.
No, because that was really, they were not suspects in anything. And so the defense wants to that's where the defense wants to prove that they were agents for the state. But, you know, if anything, the police were actually agents for the Anthonys, because the Anthonys were desperate to get any information on their daughter and granddaughter, grandchild, actually, that they could. So they went to the police for help. Now everything that the parents, cousins, uncles, friends, lovers, you know, that stays. There's no way that any of that stuff is going to come out. So
I would like to hope not. I mean,
well, no, I don't see it.
Sorry, carry on, Dave.
Oh no, I want that, you know, as much as it's a separate motion with agents of the state and all, I think it's like it's trumping up the motions. So hopefully they'll get something out of it. You know, I don't think that either one of them will stand on their own two legs. I think they support each other. They basically complement each other. But I think they have a better chance with the Miranda motion to get some of this stuff tossed. And you know, and then, like I said, it's going to be up to the judge to decide if he goes that route. At what point does he say, okay, this doesn't belong, that doesn't belong? But even so, there's still so much evidence against Casey. So I'm not worried about it, really.
Okay, I was going to ask Jan a question, but I'm going to put Peter on the hot seat instead. Yeah, well, he's good at it, and he deserves some heat. Peter, the defense is claiming that basically, George, Cindy, and Lee Anthony were recruited as agents of the state. I mean, what do you make of that?
It's actually more of a problem than for the defense than we might initially think, and here's why. What will be the claim of happened to this child? We have a report of a missing child. We have a big question mark about why it has been over a month since the report was made. And then we have the initial testimony that she was kidnapped by the babysitter. So by Cheney Mason going after this like it's a conspiracy and saying that the police were coercing the Anthony family into entrapping their daughter, what they're almost, they have to have a de facto admission that the story about the babysitter is false. So it's a big step for Cheney Mason to take, and I'm not sure if he realizes how close to the cliff he's dancing. And the problem with, I think, Cheney Mason in doing this is that he has a tremendous ego, and he came in riding that ego, and things have not worked out. I've never seen anyone look so foolish. Jose Baez, there was no expectation of any brilliance there. He had a terrible record before he got this case. But according to Bill Schaefer, who I like to read his material, I think he's straightforward in his language, and I enjoy his blogging, But according to him, Cheney Mason had a sterling, or at least a solid reputation. And there was an expectation, I think, and at least for me it was, and for Heather and others that I've spoken to, that this was going to be a major help to the defense. Simon, it's been a circus, as Jan said. It's been a comic show. And when you get whipped by Kathy Bellich, and I'll tell you why Kathy was able to whip him, it's not simply because she has the facts. Kathy kept her cool and asked some very strong, open-ended questions, and she embarrassed him. And instead of just staying with the truth and trying to even avoid her, he became the schoolboy who got insulted by the girl, and now he's going after her, and he won't let it go. So it's become a real comical but entertaining event for a lot of us. It's fascinating to watch.
Peter, I agree with you, except that I think that he wasn't the schoolboy. He likes to think of himself as the teacher.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, because he does the same thing with Judge Perry. He tries to take him to school, too. And you can't do that with Judge Perry.
You have to remember, too, when Cheney first got on board, he did make the remark that this was going to be fun. I mean,
yeah.
He went in like it was a joke. That he
thought
it was going to be an easy piece, an easy cut case.
And
yeah,
I think that he's had a paternal tone towards people, like he was they're going to be the schoolmaster. But what he was reduced to was that imbecile name-calling child that was at a loss for words and didn't know what to do. So he went in, and we all know, and this is going to be played over and over, but he's retiring on this. On video,
right.
He said that Casey and I will be walking arm in arm down the streets. We played over and over again. This is how he went out in his career. I think it's awful. But there's the pride and there's the fall, and the two are pretty good friends.
No, it says that the pride goeth before the fall, my friend. That's number one. Number two, it's kind of like, I don't know where you guys are in the world right now, but I'm in my backyard. And I'm looking up at the moon. Actually, the moon is out, and it's a beautiful, crisp 77-degree temperature in South Florida. It's beautiful. And it goes to this. It depends on what light you look at this case under. Now, if you look up at the moon right now, it's a half of a silver dollar, and it's upside down. Now, tonight, when you look at it, it'd be a half of a silver dollar, and it'd be right side up. So it depends on what light is on it. Whatever light they shine on this thing is going to be the outcome of the whole case. Like I said, in case any of you missed it, if you go out and look at the moon right now, it's an upside-down U. If you go out and look at it tonight, it'll be a right-side-up U. It depends on what light is shining on it.
Okay, that was deep and philosophical.
I like that.
Right.
It was very deep, my friend, and I put it out there for those ones that listen that are very deep in thought. And exactly,
okay.
It goes to the crux of the matter. It depends on what light all this is shined on. You shine the right light in there, she's gone. You shine a different light in there, she walks, period and simple.
Mm. Well, I can't answer that one.
Right. No, as I said, it was deep and philosophical.
That's why he's trying to skip over me, isn't he? Is that some kind of insult?
No, I left that for you to figure out. I left that for you to figure out there, Peter. You know if I'm telling the story or not, so you figure that one out.
I got to tell you, in terms of the jury and really what Cobra's referring to as people's perspective in the light, Dr. Lillian Glass has been following the case very closely. She's really concerned that the prosecution is not using an expert for the jury choice.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't comment on that because it's such a slam dunk case and there's just the overwhelming evidence. But recent events have shown a little bit of the wisdom of that because with OJ we had the race card and the country was split according to race and that was a different issue. But here, there are people who can go on a jury who believe that Casey is innocent and that she's framed and they want to marry her and they send her money every month. And they have a hard time accepting that someone can be so devious as not only to snuff out the life of her, not even 3-year-old child, but then to go and try to pin it on Jesse Grund. So this is it's a scary, scary thing. And just a juror or two that says, you know, I looked at her and I look in her eyes, and I know the evidence, but I look in her eyes and I can tell she didn't do it. I can tell that. There are people that are like that in this world. And it's scary.
Confidence is one that you got to be careful of. There was a gentleman a long, long time ago who felt that same way. His name was Goliath, and a little fella named David took his light out. So you have to look at that.
Dave, I want to ask you about this, but I'm not looking for anything super secret. Can there be a fair jury found for the case?
Yes, absolutely. And I'll tell you why. Because people in Orlando know me, they know who I am. I'm not trying to bribe or anything like that. That's not the point. You know, I sometimes ask people if they know me about that case. I get people. Some people just sit there and tell me, can she kill Anthony now? I say, the woman they found the little girl's body in the woods. They go, oh, yeah, yeah. Is that trial already over? So there's an awful lot of people that don't pay attention to it. So I believe that a jury could be picked here. But since it is going to go somewhere else, I mean, that really increases the odds of a fair jury, you know, coming into this town. So I'm not afraid of that. I'm not afraid of that at all. And wherever they come from, it's not going to be an issue. I don't care if it's even something that's still considered Central Florida, but which might encompass like Daytona Beach, which would be Volusia County. I don't know where they're going to pick the jury, but I don't think it's going to be a problem at all. Not one bit.
The case has received so much publicity. I find it hard to believe that you can find a jury that doesn't have some sort of preconceived notion about it.
Well, you're always going to have your people who are biased. Like some people who are attracted to the case, they're attracted for so many different reasons. One, they can relate to the mother being narcissistic or whatever, or they can't understand the mothers and grandmothers in particular that follow the case because they can't fathom anyone killing such an adorable little child or any mother doing something harmful to a little child. So, but you've got a lot of people that are more worried about their bank account now too. You know, there's so many other things that cross people's minds. They're just not locked in on this case. We are because we write about it, we read about it, we comment, whatever, we blog. But to the rest of the world, there's an awful lot of people that don't particularly care about this case. And that's where you call your jury from. It can be from anywhere. You understand what I mean?
Dave, you're breaking up again.
Oh, darn.
Yeah, oh, darn. But I do like the subject of jury selection. As I understand it, the deal is that the trial will be held in Orlando, but they're going to bus the jury in from somewhere else. That almost inevitably means a situation where they're going to be sequestered. Sequestered jurors are not happy jurors. Do you think that's going to be a big problem?
I don't. I don't think the case is going to drag out terribly the way some people do. And the reason being is that I think that Judge Perry is going to move it along. And so I know that no one likes to be sequestered. No one likes to be put out. And it gets to kind of test everyone's patience. But I think it goes back again to the evidence. It's just so powerful against her. It's just, I for the last 2 years now, we've been talking about this, and I still can't think of a possible defense that they should go other than the early plea. What can be done?
Well, so I got an answer for you. They either go with the new stuff that they got floating around out there, but I'll tell you, and as far as this jury and getting a fair trial and everything like that, time is one of the greatest healers. And I don't believe that if I was working for the defense, the first thing that I would do would be to control Casey's demeanor throughout all these hearings and through the trial. Her demeanor is going to make the break or drop point for her. That's number one. Number two, most people are so burnt up with her mother and daddy with all their nonsensical bullshit that they're going to lean towards that and see that she had a very, very rough child life. The child, Kaylee, has been gone for so long now that's lost focus. Now the focus is, are you willing as a juror to either, A, put this young girl, this young mother who follows the merit of young mothers across the world, the United States, and, you know, a lot of them now in the headlines of killing their kids or did something stupid or shook them to death or all these crazy-ass things. Are you willing to either put a needle in her arm or sentence her to life without or any of those things? Are you willing to look at her child upbringing and what she had? Because Kaylee is off the table right now. Enough times went by, we don't even think about Kaylee anymore. We're talking about Casey, and Susan, and, you know, the dad and the son and this, that, and the other. We hardly ever even us as panelists and as people speaking about this case, hardly we ever take time to realize the innocence was lost here. Now, to find a jury that's willing to lose yet another innocence to put her in prison for life, I just don't think it's going to happen. I think if her demeanor is controlled properly and she's not smirking and laughing and just this normal demeanor, I would let the mother's demeanor and the daddy's demeanor win the case for the defense. That's where I would go with it.
Jen, the one thing I noticed during the last set of hearings was she was relatively demure. I didn't see a lot of smirking. In fact, it looked like she was learning how to write.
Actually, I think they've got her trained that way now. I think they've got her figured out. Yeah, I think they got her to where she says either that or they've got her totally convinced that she's going to get off of this. She doesn't look like someone
who's
worried.
It's showing in her demeanor. I don't know what part of these hearings that you were watching, but if someone would make something comical, when they were referring to George's build, and immediately I know, as Padilla said, that her mind was flipped over to this Marine that she was dating along about the same time, who's been unaccounted for, and they've transferred him all over the United States and the world to get him out of the limelight. That's his build. That's his size. So she reflected back to that. And it's not so much that she broke out in a ha-ha laughter. It's eye contact. It's the demeanor that she, with her head, when she's doing all this fancy scribbling and doing all that stuff. That's all demeanor breaks right there. She needs to be not neutral, distant, just, you know, like just anything they would say wouldn't raise an eyebrow, wouldn't cause her to look up, look down, look sideways, nothing, just stone cold, sitting there, taking it all in, not writing, not scribbling, not none of that shit. I watched it, and I saw her demeanor change about 10 times. And she was, you know, at some point when they would say something that was a little bit on the laughter side, you know, it's not funny what they're going through. And she would break a smile or something would happen. Those are all, she has to appear distant. There's a word I'm looking for, disconnected, just totally disconnected. And just like, this is not her trial. This is somebody else's trial. And she's on the jury and she's taking in the information and deciding the fate of someone else. That type of demeanor, but she's not, to what I've seen, she's not made an example of that yet. She's done everything but that, and she's rised and falled with different questions, the raising of the eyebrows and all that kind of shit. You don't do that shit. You sit there, stone cold, man.
Dave, I think we have Dave back on the line.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, good.
Can
okay,
you hear
yeah.
me now?
Yes. This is a regular old phone, so. I'm the man with a bag of phones.
Right.
Not like you got a better one.
Yeah, it is.
You were in the courtroom for a good deal of the 3.5 days of testimony. What were your views on Casey's demeanor?
Well, one of the things about Casey is that she kind of like her life is on a different plane, different level, playing field. She's not there. She's off in some imaginary world. And it's like when somebody plays with one of her toys, even though it's sitting there and she's not playing with it, she gets very upset and she yanks it back away from you. You know, she's just a I don't understand that girl at all. She's mad at her family, and that's going to be a terrible thing for the jury to see. That's going to help seal her fate because she's just not with it, and
Peter,
she's just constantly writing notes and everything.
Yep, Peter, you're. I know that you're a big proponent of Dr. Lillian Glass, so I'm sure that you looked at Casey's demeanor in court. What did you make of it?
I like the descriptions given here. I think that she is being coached to try to show a detachment from it and almost a professional demeanor. Yet she could not masquerade that animosity towards her family. And, Cobra, that was the first time I've heard anyone say or even question us whether or not this has anything to do with Kaylee. And sadly, I have to admit, I haven't thought of Kaylee. I haven't thought about justice for Kaylee. It's more been about Casey. So I agree with that. And I think that the emphasis upon Casey now is going to hurt her, because we're seeing that animosity just come from her pores. She is a really strange character. She is one of the rarest of rare liars that we'll ever find in terms of how deception is done. She presents stories that never happened, where most people will be deceptive by leaving out information. And there's always a cross. The things don't come from a vacuum. So the name Zanny coming from her love of Xanax and how hip that sounded at the time. And but there is, it's looking like a soulless person, where she has no soul left inside of her, and the hatred and anger towards her family and the stories of the possible molestation that took place. These are really, really strange people, all of them. And the perception of George and Cindy by the nation should have been something that really helped Casey, that we should have been looking at grandparents that we just grieved along with. Instead, what we saw was Casey's mentors, Casey's teachers.
Uh-huh.
Casey's violence we see from Cindy. Cindy's a violent person. Casey's
wow.
weakness, her spinelessness comes from George's spinelessness. Just these characters, remember Brother Lee. He comes into the courtroom, slovenly dressed, unshaven, the most arrogant demeanor. He holds the world in contempt. It's almost a bother of his time. And then, as despicable as he is, Casey hates him. So who do we relate to? I have not seen a single person in the family. It reminds me of the email that Cindy's brother sent her, saying, "All America hates you. You look so stupid. Stop your lying." And it ended up being true, that the America despises these people. All of them.
Yep.
Well, just for the record, I have to say this. I haven't forgot Kaylee, and that's what I preach about all the time, is that they forget. This is about Kaylee. I'm sorry, I just had to add that.
It's not something I'm proud of, it's just that I haven't thought of
Kaylee. I know, and I'm just saying that I just had to say that I have never forgotten that the idea that this is all about Kaylee, and I wish that they wouldn't forget it. I wish that they would keep it in there, because this is about her. She's the one that lost her life. She's the innocent one that's the victim here. Casey's not a victim. I don't care how they look at it. She's not a victim. Cindy's not a victim. George is not a victim. It was Kaylee that was the victim.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Kaylee was nothing more than a novelty to that family before she was murdered. She was something to be fought over. She was a tool between Casey and Cindy to harm and hurt each other. But when you, as a grandparent, as a parent, as an uncle, as a guy next door, if you can think of a less caring people and you can name them, it's going to be a struggle. Imagine your child, your grandchild, your niece, your nephew, your whatever, going to off with a babysitter as an infant on overnights, yet you've never met them, talked to them, ran background checks, shook their hand, looked into their eyes to get a feel. No one gave a damn about Kaylee. No one did. And so George and Cindy playing this is guilt they were projecting out because they didn't care about her. She was a novelty. Her name is a novelty. The name of Casey and Lee put together is one name. She was just something to put on the shelf and bring out and show people how cute she is and put her back in again. No one cared
about
her.
She's what they used against each other.
Exactly.
They
she
used
was a
that pawn. Child against each other. That's exactly right.
You're sure they're cats than they do a human being. They
sure?
find out more about the cat that they're going to drop off at the shelter or at the place where people drop their pets off overnights. They do more background checks on a kennel than these people bothered to do. How could she fool them for 2 years as if she was going to a job and dropping a child off someplace? And how could they be that stupid?
I just want to ask Peter one question. Are you really from Maine? Because you sound like you're from Maitland, Florida. You sound like you live next door to these folks.
It's got my Irish up here.
You sure enough got them pegged to the bone.
Yeah, they are just a callous group that they produced Lee and Casey. Never forget this, and if anyone can explain to me, especially you, Dave, being down there, why did Lee high-five Casey?
Uh-huh.
You know, that's a good question. I the whole thing really started off on a bad foot. There's no doubt about that with that family. You know, I think that George, I think they loved the kid. There's no doubt about that. You know, that and they pampered that kid. And I think one of the reasons that Casey really resented her parents was because that was just another little piece of icing that you put on that Casey cake. It was that she was jealous of her daughter because her daughter was getting all the attention
right.
from her parents.
Not because,
you know,
he's
so,
my friend, not because he's my friend, Dave, but I'll tell you something. From what I've seen of the family, what I know about them intimately, the details that I know, the only one person that I saw that really, truly cared for that child is Richard Grund. Now, whether he's my client or not, I'm telling you what I know. Richard
yeah,
Grund.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah,
I just think that it's too complex to sit there and really put an onus, you know, on it that it is just this and nothing else. I think there's an awful lot.
Yeah,
like
I agree with Peter. She was a pawn. That child was a pawn. And
well, yeah,
I
agree with that.
Simon, let me jump in if I could. When mm-hmm. we say that, and I'm saying this, I don't believe the child was loved. And if Jan can preach, give me a moment here. If love seeks the highest good of its object,
there you go,
they can't tell me. Yeah, you can't tell me they loved her. They may have had affectionate, they may have had happy moments, they may have felt certain emotions towards her, but did they actively, kinetically love her? Did they protect her? Did they take care of her? No, they didn't. She was a pawn, she was a novelty.
But do you know that grandparents have no rights in the state of Florida as far as what they can do with their grandchild?
that doesn't even play, Dave. Peter's 100% show me the compassion, and I'm.
Yeah,
compassion.
You know, I've often wondered about why they didn't check up on this nanny. I mean, I would have done it, you know.
They didn't care,
and,
bro.
And,
no compassion, brother. No compassion. That's what's lost in this whole thing. Nobody seems to realize one simple word. They can say I love her. So many people say I love you. I love you too. I love you. I love you. Compassion. Show me the compassion. I'll show you the love.
Well. You know, I don't know. I think there's more. I don't know. I can't just put a simple answer on such a tough case.
I'll break it down for you. If you're a believer at all, Jesus Christ, when he gave his life on the cross, he didn't do it out of love. He said, I love you, but he gave it out of compassion. Compassion is the highest form of love. Love is something that people use too frequently. Oh, I love her. Oh, she loves me. I love that dog. Don't you love the color of that paint? But when you're like emotionally tied to compassion, to where it exhumes you, to where you're so compassionate about something, the love is just there automatically. This thing that they call love and all that crap is just crap. This child.
Well, you know, initially, what made him change? I mean, initially they were right there for Kaylee. And something changed that.
Anger, brother. They, as I said earlier when your phone was breaking off, they were angry. It's like domestic violence in the country. A boyfriend beats up a girlfriend. A husband beats up a wife. By the time the damn thing comes to trial, if the state hasn't picked up the charges, and Peter can tell you, then one of the parties is trying to dismiss, and, well, they don't show up or they don't want to come in because the anger has worn off. And that's what's happened in this case. At first, they were angry. I haven't seen my daughter in 30 days. Smells like a damn dead body in there. I never said it smelled like a dead body. I just thought it smelled like a dead body. Did you find a dead body? No. And so what happened is the anger came up off of it. There was no compassion going into it. That was anger. You have to really do a study on human nature to find out the difference between anger and compassion. Love, compassion. Compassion is the ruler. Once they have that, then everything else clicks. This family has no compassion, still has no compassion. They don't even have any compassion for each other now that their own daughter is up in there.
But getting back to what Peter said, and he's right here, you know, that they played Kaylee. They all played Kaylee. You know, they all took advantage of her. And I think that Casey was a kind of a person. Obviously, she's like this. And she threatened to take the girl away if they didn't leave her alone, let her run her own life with her own daughter. And I think she intimidated the crap out of her parents that way because they didn't want to get involved in a where they never see the little girl again.
Yeah, well, you sound like you just agreed with us that she was a pawn. That's what a pawn is.
Well, she was a pawn, but that doesn't mean that they didn't love her.
I think it's emotional blackmail over the baby.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I have to ask this question.
Uh-oh.
Right, I'm a father, and apparently I'm going to be a grandfather.
Oh God,
I must be getting old.
Congratulations.
Yeah, well, thank you. You know, Jan is a grandmother.
To three boys.
Yeah. Wow. You have some busy kids.
Kids. It's all for one family.
But, I see a real problem with the Anthony family. There's just this lack of giving a damn. I mean, someone mentioned earlier, you know, how come they didn't notice for 2 years that Casey didn't have a job? Well,
yeah.
I'll tell you what. You know, if Jen told me she had a job, I'd notice within about 30 seconds that she was bullshitting. You know, oh, how come you're still in bed?
Simon, if I could jump in there.
Sure.
The expression of how we walk in life, the Greek language is very rich. It has six different words for the word walk. And in particular, the word that I am thinking of means a pattern norm of living. So let's say that you're a nice man, and once in a blue moon you raise your voice, and when you do, you're sorry about it. Your normal walk is to be a gentleman and to be polite, and you're not abusive. Did what you did was wrong? Yes, you owned it, but that's not your walk. That's not your norm. What was the norm for Kaylee's life? The norm for Kaylee's life, this went on from what I've read, the time she was 8 months old, that she was being given over to a stranger for sleepovers. Do you know what kind of terror that causes on a child that's not familiar, not broken in? So the grandparents had to be completely and utterly disconnected from her emotionally in order to not watch over her. What was their walk like? What was their normal pattern? Their normal pattern was abdication. They didn't check on the nanny They didn't ask about the nanny. They didn't give the nanny their phone number in case there's an emergency. They didn't meet with the nanny and say, this is Kaylee's favorite blankie, this is anything. So it's like me saying, I really love my dog, but I'm not going to feed him. I'm going to leave him out in the cold, and I'm not going to give him any affection. But when people come over, I bring him out, and everyone looks how cute he is, and I get my picture taken, and on his birthday I have a big party, and everyone thinks I'm something. But every day when no one's looking, that dog suffers. That was the life of Kaylee. Kaylee was a pawn, and she was used against them in vicious ways. But let's not forget the worst of it. And I think that we may end up finding out one day that she spent a lot of hours drugged and in that trunk. Okay? I think this was the norm. But the grandparents, it's not just that they're stupid. They're not stupid people. Cindy is a registered nurse, and George is a professional non-worker. He works hard at not working. They're not stupid people. They had to be willful in their ignoring of that child's needs and wants in order to pull this off for as long as she did. So this was the normal pattern. So if you come to me and you are freezing cold and hungry, and I put my hands on your shoulders and say, I love you, and I send you back into the cold with no food and no covering for yourself, that love is phony. It's right. Maybe it's an emotion, it's fleeting. It didn't change anything. Love affects a change upon people. It puts their needs ahead of our own. And that's so natural for you and for Jan, to your children, your grandchildren. It's as natural as breathing to you. It is as natural as breathing to Kaylee and Cindy to not care about anyone but themselves. And so when she fought over that child, the moment that child was born, it didn't matter how much she was going to hurt Kaylee. She was going to enjoy that. In the video, when Kaylee says to the mother, I saw your cameo this morning, Mom, instead of the mother saying, Kaylee, don't call it a cameo. I'm out there for you. I'm out there for Kaylee, whatever her fraudulent purpose would be. She said, oh, which one? What that meant is she took the same language and said, you're going to zing me, and you're in jail right now. You're behind bars like an animal. I'm still going to zing you back. This is the high level of hatred. So
it's like, was it that, or was it also Cindy's own vanity, you know, that she was on TV?
Well, I actually think it was a vanity day, but the vanity precludes the love. In other words, if you're seeking
the highest person,
you've got to boycott yourself there. They all think of themselves. I'll tell you what, we haven't touched upon it, but George and River Cruise is another issue, and George pilfering people and trying to rip off money, and we have the Kid Finders Network, we have the marketing of Kaylee, and I mean, this is just one huge disaster of what selfishness does, eating up and destroying people, until finally it was decided by Kaylee that Kaylee was in the way of her life, and there's no better way for me to hurt my mother, and I'll get back finally, than to take away her life. And this was the brutal. Think of what it means to a three-year-old. You'll see them in Walmart someplace as you're shopping for food, and you just want to pick them up and cuddle them. They're so much fun at age three.
Right.
And she was a beautiful little girl. Think of what it took to overcome maternal instincts, to put her hand and eventually duct tape over that mouth. Think of the callousness, because I can't enter into that.
I think Jeff Ashton said it right.
He did. He did a great job with that.
Simon,
yeah.
I'm gonna have to run off your program here for a little while, brother man, and I want you guys to have a good one. And I can't wait to rejoin you and discuss some of these things. If you've got any other questions for me, I'll answer them right now. Otherwise, I'm going to turn like a dust mite.
Okay. let me guess. You're going to demolish another part of your house.
I'm going to demolish something. I got a strange urge to fire up a chainsaw.
Oh, my God. And
hey, have you heard a chainsaw run lately? Goes, I got one here. If I could get the damn thing started, son, I would be a good man.
Cobra, you be good, be safe. And
right.
Don't come kicking my door in.
Not again. I only say that once in a lifetime to scare the shit out of you like that. And Peter and Dave, you guys be...
Yeah,
well,
great hearing from you. Great hearing from you, Cobra.
Good hearing,
always
good
a pleasure.
Both y'all. Jan, keep signing straight, please.
Keep him straight.
Oh,
if you can.
I'll try.
All right. Otherwise,
you take care.
All right, buddy. All right. Talk to you all later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
All right.
Okay. I want to bring up another subject. And again, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know what any of this means, other than it's a lot of stinking money. It seems to me that buyers burnt through $275,000 of real money, and now he's burnt up close to $90,000.
Well, if he gets this extra money.
Right, of taxpayers' money. Is this reasonable? I mean, when the real money was gone and they declared indigent status on Casey, why didn't they just appoint a public defender?
Can answer that.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I want to say that, for what they did to Judge Strickland did a great job for them. He took a look at that money that was spent, you know, the money that came in from selling the pictures, the money that came in from Macaluso, and he was satisfied with where it went. So we'll never know. Basically, we'll never know where the money went. But as long as the judge was satisfied, that's fine. He then went on to declare her indigent. Now, what happened was during that hearing, I think it was in January, like January 25th, or that might have been I don't remember which one it was. But he asked Bob Wellesley. Bob Wellesley is the head of the public defender's office in Orange County. And he testified that his office was deluged with, you know, they were taking care of a lot of people. They didn't have the manpower to handle it. And secondly, the law is very clear on that. You can retain your attorneys if they'll work pro bono. So, and Baez was locked in. I believe Mason was too. You're locked in and you cannot quit this case. So they're not making any money now. When Baez made a comment about making $3 an hour, he meant that facetiously, but the public defender's office didn't have the funds to defend her. That not this kind of a case, if that makes sense to you.
Sure.
Okay, but what's pro bono mean if that's the case? Because that's what they went in as. They claimed that they were going in as pro bono. That's free. They're not.
That, no, they didn't go into it. No, Mason. No, they didn't go into it for free. That's where all that $275,000 went.
But they agreed that they were going to be pro bono because they knew that
after she was ruled indigent. They said right then and there at that hearing that they would work for free and Dr. Henry Lee would work for a crate of oranges. So, you know, I mean, there you go. I mean, this is like somebody like this infamous or this famous and infamous at the same time doctor working for a crate of oranges. No wonder they said they'd work for free. So, and then, like I said, the judge said, you're in here, you're locked into this case, you can't quit. And that's it.
This would be the same famous Dr. Henry Lee from the OJ trial. Oh, I don't remember. All you round eyes look the same.
Yeah, that's him. That's him. So that's what happened, though. I mean, they were told that they had to work for free and they had to stay on the case. And that saved the public defender's office a lot of money, by the way. So the state actually got a deal out of that.
Peter, what's your thoughts on this?
I had a little trouble with the math of that one, but I look at the big picture of the ethical dilemma that is presented there. How much money is Casey Anthony going to cost the taxpayers of Florida? She has a defense. She has her upkeep and her maintenance. Kaylee wasn't afforded anything. She can't get anything. We see Casey now eating munchies and getting her money in from her dad and others that have been putting it in, and some coming from donations. And probably for the next 40 or 50 years of her life, she's going to be a burden on the state. Or by the, if the death penalty is given, will that be 10, 15, 20 years from now? How many millions of dollars does it cost to keep her alive?
Right.
I think it's just it's horrific.
You mean how much it's going to keep her? How much it's going to cost to keep her alive while facing the death penalty, or just keeping her in prison for the rest of her life?
Both ways.
Either way, I think that it's just it's a terrible burden how we have things set up right now, where if someone were to murder your loved one, and the murder is just obvious and it's proven beyond a shadow of doubt, and the person's given life in prison, that means your tax dollars against your will are going to support that murderer for the rest of that murderer's life, who took away your loved
one. Well, that's the way this system works. I mean, you can't just draw the line on one person named Casey Anthony. I mean, this has always been the way it's worked. What's the argument, though? I mean, that why she shouldn't be considered the same as any other argument?
No, I'm referring to all of them. I'm referring just to Casey. I'm saying, is it ethically and morally, the issues that I think of personally, is if Cindy knows, if George knows, if it's known that that she did this, is there anyone out there that could say, that would have the courage, the moral courage to say, this was wrong, I need to plead guilty, I need to stop the drain?
Oh, yeah, well, you know, I don't think that that's in her vocabulary, and it's not in the vocabularies of many other prisoners, people charged with a crime. I mean, you notice that the guys who killed burned the house down, killing the family, the doctor's wife, they all pleaded not guilty. I mean, they always plead not guilty, and you know that they're guilty. But I guess they can work out deals that way. If you just go in and plead guilty, that would be nice, but I don't see people doing that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, it's very rare to find anyone that will say take any type of responsibility for themselves. And I think that overall the system is broken, that when it takes us 10, 15, even 20 years to a murderer to put them to death, to have them, they forfeited their right to their life.
Well, there's a guy from the 70s. There's a guy from the 70s here that he's been on death row all these years, you know, and I moved down here in 81, and I think he was on one of his appeals then.
Wow.
So, yeah, the guy, you know, it's just that now he's getting a new trial because of DNA evidence that he thinks will prove that he didn't do it. And he's just like this John Huggins guy. I mean, I wrote about this guy he basically knows how to work the system. And he's been sentenced to death twice by Judge Perry. And by the way, Judge Perry is 9 for 9 when it comes to sentencing somebody to death. So the defense did not get a bargain with this judge. They got a fair judge, but one that's not going to have any qualms about sentencing Casey to death if she's found guilty.
That was
an
interesting point when that first came out, when they sought to get Strickland removed. And this is what they got. Very, very telling about their strategy. If we go back to the money for a minute, I think that it does speak to Jose Baez's character. And there is a certain type of highly insecure man who, if he has $15,000, he'll go and buy a Rolex and wear his Rolex while he's living in his car because his house has been foreclosed on, or he hasn't paid the mortgage or the rent or something like that. All show. Jose Baez is of the high self-opinion that he shouldn't have to pay those little bills. They should just be paid by someone else because he's Jose Baez. And I think that it's not just the Casey Anthony case. This is who he is. And the years before this case, I think, are fascinating. Have either of you looked into that, his record as an attorney,
yes.
How long it took him to get to the bar?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but he did get there, so, you know, by hook or by crook. But and by crook,
oh,
I mean that's a double entendre.
By bikini.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, would I want him as my attorney if I was in the same position as Casey? No, I would have gotten somebody who knows, you know, a lot more about murder. I mean, that guy came very green, and this is, you know, there's been a learning curve the whole time. You know, he was lucky when he came up with Chaney Mason. The only reason why I say that is because, you know, there's an attorney in town who's very, very powerful. You don't see him on TV, but he's very powerful. And he's told me on numerous occasions that these motions, particularly these motions that we just heard, have Chaney Mason's name written all over them. You know, I don't know necessarily, because some people have asked me, why didn't the defense think about this earlier, filing these motions?
Yeah.
And there could be a couple of different reasons. But one, I think, is because early on, Jose Baez wouldn't have thought of this. And I think everything has to come at its proper time, too. So, and sometimes you just have where you put all these minds together and nobody comes up with it, and all of a sudden somebody comes along and says, hey, why don't you file this motion or that motion? And then they go, bingo, why didn't we think about that before? But, you know, Mason's got all this experience, but to be honest with you, I'm not really impressed with him. So.
Oh, okay, I want to change the subject, and I want to go round the table. Are we looking at a long trial or a short trial? Jan, what do you think? Is this going to be one of those, you know, month after month deals?
I don't think it should be, but I think they're going to try to make it that way.
Peter?
I'm with Jan in the sense that that it's going to be attempted to be drawn out. I don't think it'll be hyper short, but I don't think it'll be one of these endless months and months and months because of Judge Perry's no-nonsense attitude.
Right.
Dave?
Well, you know, Judge Perry asked that question in the courtroom not all that long ago, and the answer, he asked both parties, so the answer he got was basically anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks from even the defense. So I don't think they're looking at really necessarily trying to draw this thing out, because they don't really want to risk angering the jury either. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's
particularly not if they're sequestered.
Especially that, you know. I mean, that means nothing, you know. They can't read the newspaper. They're limited on what they can watch. They have movies, you know. They have a whole selection of movies that they can watch.
Yeah, but
you're not
going to
see, like, you know, Injustice for All or any movie like that. You're going to see Peter Pan and stuff like that, I think.
But I also think that there will be an element where the defense has a long list of people they want to call. And this is just a guess on my part. I think there will be a lot of people on the defense list that they may not call when it comes down to
it. Oh, there's actually more on the state's list. So, I mean, they've got, what, upwards of 300, 350 people? I don't know what the exact number is. But, you know, they put everybody on there to really kind of, like, confuse the defense. So,
what I mean is that the defense, in terms of who they're calling, what we've seen a pattern of not doing their homework and not following through on things. You know, this is the same guy that wouldn't pay the $300 Staples bill to pick up papers. He hasn't followed through.
Right.
Judge Perry humiliated him, saying, either you schedule those depositions, or I'll do it for you. I'll pick up the phone and I'll schedule these things for you.
Yeah, but you know, I don't think if you look at at the defense's witness list, it's pretty vacant, you know. So I think the only chance I'll have after all these deadlines go is that something comes up suddenly and they ask the court to add another name or whatever, another couple of names. But I don't think this judge is going to sit around and give the defense what they want if they don't follow deadlines, you know. So he still wants to make sure that Casey gets a fair trial, but you got to draw the line somewhere.
It's my opinion, and it's purely a personal opinion. It was a really bad move getting rid of Strickland. What does the panel think?
I agree, Simon.
What's that now? I had to move my phone.
Getting rid of Strickland was about the stupidest move the defense could have made.
Well, there's always that be careful who you wish or what you wish for, because I know for a fact that you know, Judge Perry was not the choice. I don't, you know, there were a number of judges that the defense wanted. In particular, they wanted a judge who would be more willing to dump the death penalty, and they didn't get that at all. Now, do they like Judge Perry? Yeah, I think they do like him, and he's fair. He's no more fair than Strickland. I mean, I think they're pretty much on par like that. Most of the judges are good, but you know, when it comes right down to it, if a jury finds her guilty, then she stands a really good chance of being sentenced to death because it's going to be his call in the end.
Dave, why do you think that the defense likes Judge Perry?
Because they said so right from the bat, right from the get-go. When they got him, they said, oh, we're very pleased with this guy, you know. But
you believe that, though?
To a certain extent, only because they know that they're going to get a fair trial. I mean, that's all they got out of it which they would have gotten from Strickland anyway. So when they rolled the dice, which I wrote an article, I titled it A Roll of the Die, because, you know, it was like, well, this could be a death sentence, you know, that's looming. So, yeah, I think they like him. Everybody has respect for him, no doubt about it. But he is more of a prosecutor's judge than he is for a defense. So, yeah, I think that... I think they're happy that they got him in a sense that he's fair, but that's the extent of it.
Jen, I have to ask your thoughts. And my thoughts are that Strickland was a little lax insofar as he gave Baez way too much rope. Perry doesn't seem to do that.
I think Strickland was more like trying to protect it from going into a mistrial, doing everything that he could to keep it from going into a mistrial, and I think he just was too soft on it. He was a good judge, don't get me wrong, because I did like him, but I think he was more worried about the trial going into mistrial if they didn't allow this or he didn't allow that they were asking for.
Well, oh, and I don't. You're right, and I don't.
I don't.
No, I just
want
to say I don't think that there was any. You know, as far as the rulings, you know, what they hoped would get was a more liberal judge. So all those rulings were Judge Strickland ordered without prejudice. Then they could refile, but Judge Perry denied every one of them. So there's no difference there, which I think was a big mistake too for the defense.
Right. But don't get me wrong here. I don't think that Judge Strickland was trying to prevent a mistrial. I think he was just trying to prevent possible appeals.
Oh, they all do it that way. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But he knew too that he was backed into a corner once they filed that motion for him to step down. He was backed into a corner. One of the media people called me up one day and said, "Dave, it was over the weekend. You know that they filed that on a Friday and said he's got no choice." It was a terrible weekend for me. I'm telling you like that. I mean, it was really a bad weekend. But the problem was that any ruling from then on, if he stayed on the case. Could be used as a reason for an appeal because of his prejudice. So he had no choice but to stand down. And, you know, it was a real shame. But you know what? It is what it is, and Casey's going to get her comeuppance. It's going to come one day. So Judge Strickland is fine with everything, and so is everybody else in the courtroom. So, you know, it's too bad, but that's the way it worked.
I'm looking at the game clock, and I'm looking at my list of notes. No, it's not quite working the way I had hoped. Peter, I really would like to get an update on the Billie Jean Dunn case and the Tiffany Hartley case. Can you give us a thumbnail sketch on what's going on?
Sure. On Tiffany Hartley, I spoke to someone in law enforcement down that area, and it appears that they have not been duped by her story, and that those in federal law enforcement are aware of her lie, and there is an ongoing investigation with some cooperation between the Mexican prosecutors and our own investigators. They have not simply let David Hartley's death go in vain and simply accepted Tiffany Hartley's explanation. So I was really cheered to hear that. And you want to update on the other case as well?
Yes, please.
Billie Jean Dunn, she's the mother of missing 13-year-old Haley Dunn, is indeed a person of interest, and that is a factual announcement that came on a Bring Them Home Now radio broadcast, in which I was asked to be a guest on the show when Billie Jean Dunn called in. So I was able to interview her for about 12 or 13 minutes, and it was interesting. It was interesting to say the least. So for those that have been hoping for justice for Haley Dunn, the more that the two persons of interest, the mother and the boyfriend, speak, the more information we've been able to gain. So I think there's some movement in that case, and I think we're going to see some movement in the next couple of weeks, maybe earlier.
I sincerely hope so. And Jen, I want to put you on the spot just because, well, you're right there.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to bring us up to date on some of the cases that you've been following?
Well, let me bring up the three main ones that we had covered that's still unsolved. And I, just to get their name out there, I'd like to keep it out there, like Zachary Pittman from Pearl River, Louisiana. He disappeared, and his mother has been, Christy Raggis, has been frantically still on the go looking for him. They still searching for him. I talked to her a couple of weeks ago, and they haven't given up. They're still looking, but they haven't found him yet. And also, of course, we can't forget Haley Cummings, the little girl from Florida, from Satsuma, missing since February 10th, 2009. We all love, fell in love with this little girl, and she still hasn't been found. Adjie Desir from Immokalee, I think is how you pronounce it, Florida. He's been missing since January 10th, 2009, and he hasn't been found either. And you know, it's sad because they've got families left behind that still want to know what happened to these children. Zach was a grown man with a child of his own, but his mother still wants to know where he's at, what happened to her son. And, you know, I'd just like to keep them in our prayers because we don't want to forget them. And also, Simon, I've been following some other cases, but, you know, just keeping updates on them. A woman from Cathedral City, California, ran off with her kids. They were at McDonald's. She had lost custody of her kids, and there were unsupervised visits. She got this one first one, the unsupervised visits. They allowed her to go to McDonald's with her three kids, and when the woman came back, the social worker come back to pick the kids up, they were all gone, and they haven't been found. Another mother took off with her five-month-old baby. And, you know, all these stories can be seen on our, what do you call it, sister? Go ahead, son.
Yeah, you can find all of these on our sister website, narwo.com, narwo.com. And I want to add one more quick story. We're getting out of time here, but there's a story out of Miami, actually it's Miami Beach, Florida, that just has me incensed. The Shahada Hussein killing, two-time killer Adam Tavis was exonerated by the Miami Beach PD internal investigation, And my guess is there's going to be a civil suit coming soon. More on that story later. Okay, we're just about out of time. So I really want to thank Peter Hyatt for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Simon. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Peter, for being here.
And
Dave.
And I want to thank Dave Neckel. Dave, it's always fun to talk with you.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. And Peter, it was really great talking to you today. It's been a long time.
Nice to hear from you again. Yeah, it has been, Dave.
Yeah.
And
Jan, thank you. Simon, thank you. Yes.
Thank you.
Yep. And,
my pleasure.
And Jan, you can now go wash the dishes.
No, gee, thank you.
Hey, and if you want to send me information on that Miami case, please do.
I will.
Yeah,
I'm still waiting on some material to arrive my way, and I'm sure it will. Okay, I want to thank everyone that has listened today, all of the people that took part, all of our listeners, and great to be...
thank you, Simon, for doing this.
Right. Okay, till next time, this is Simon and Jen Barrett wishing everyone a happy and safe Sunday.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.